Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. The first line of a novel doesn't always tell you a lot, but in the case of Chrysler Zarlin's debut, it sets the mood right away. On the day I killed my husband, the scent of lilacs startled me awake. Her novel, The Holly Book of the Dead, introduces us to Revelation Dyer. Together, she and her husband Jeremy have three daughters, a beautiful home, and a world-famous Las Vegas magic act. But Rev has many secrets, secrets that have not only shaped her past, but now threaten her family. The new novel is The Holly Book of the Dead, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Chrysler Zarlin to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here, Joe. Thank you so much for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. I love talking to debut authors. Your story is fascinating because this is obviously something you have wanted to do, which brings me to the question of how long has this particular story been in you?
Well, I started writing pretty seriously about 1999. And I have to confess, I have a novel and a half under my belt before I started The Holly Book of the Dead. And I'd had the title in my mind for a couple of years before I started it in about 2008. And it started out as a NaNoWriMo project, which is National Novel Writing Month. And crazy writers all over the world pledged to write 50,000 words in a month. So I did that, and I won NaNoWriMo, as they say. And it started out just as a title, and I had this image of a woman riding her horse through the forest and searching for her daughters who had gone missing. And that's all it started as, just that one idea.
Give us a sense of how you extrapolated on that and came to the story that we have in this novel, which is obviously much more fleshed out.
I have no idea, actually. Stephen King and a lot of other writers talk about how writing is kind of like archaeology. It's like you're doing a dig and little shards and scraps come out at different times. And that's kind of what the process of writing this book was like. I'm a really intuitive writer. I don't outline. I don't have a preconceived notion of where the story's going. The characters sort of take me along, lead me by the hand, and let me know what their story is. But it was about a four-year process from the time that I began the book until the time that I sent it out to agents.
So understanding the archaeology analogy, there are those shards. And also with the analogy of write what you know, so books, okay, you work in a bookstore. The horse aspect, you love horses, you ride. As far as the magic aspect, you were a magician's assistant.
I was for about 2 minutes in the 1980s.
Okay,
and
but that counts.
It counts. It counts a little. You know, I had all the accoutrements. I had the big hair. I was really thin, and could fit into the little costumes. And also fit into the little spaces. One thing you have to do as a magician's assistant and as a magician is contort your body in all kinds of weird ways to make the effects work. And that's the part I wasn't so good at. And I wasn't so good at the timing. So that job did not last so long. But yeah, I've had a number of careers. I was a lawyer for a while, and I'm a recovering lawyer now. But the work in the bookstore came later. Yeah, little bits and pieces of my life made their way into the book. But, you know, my life is pretty boring and nobody wants to read about my life. Believe me, I am not going to be one of those people that writes a memoir. And at least it won't be that interesting if I ever was stupid enough to do that. I agree with that partially, the write what you know thing. But you have to have an imagination, and you have to be willing to let the story take you where it needs to go. And so I'm really good at that. I'm not so good at then shaping it afterwards. So I'm really happy to have a lot of writing buddies and my wonderful agent and editor helping me with that stuff now.
One of the shards that I missed was that the book takes place in Holly, Massachusetts, in Western Massachusetts, and you reside there. We begin, though, in Las Vegas. So as a way of giving us a thumbprint of what the story's about, I'm hoping you could read a little bit and set up the Holly Book of the Dead for us, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the story itself.
Absolutely, Joe. And I'm going to read just the very opening paragraph, which kind of sets up the story. At least I hope it does. Holly, Five Corners, Massachusetts, November 2nd, 2013. I hold in my hands the Holly Book of the Dead, the ink freshly drying, the pages spiced with the scent of meadows or the smell of blood. Book from the past, book of magic, book of life and death. Even if I weren't the keeper of this book, I would have written on napkins tonight, in the margins of my daughter's school books, on the walls themselves, just to be able to tell and keep on telling, to make sense of the world I find myself in. I wait in the darkness, writing by candlelight, a storm raging, two dead men outside. My daughter's still gone from me.
Chrysler Zarlin reading from her novel, The Holly Book of the Dead, published by Ballantine Books. It's a hell of a way to start a novel because it really does draw you in. And I am interested into the family aspect of it because it seems as though for anyone reading a novel like this, that you immediately have this feeling of, okay, what happened to disrupt this family?
Well, it was a pretty dramatic incident, at least initially. Rev is short for revelation, and she finds out later that there is a whole backstory going back really hundreds of years. But for her, the initial incident was the death of her husband on stage during a trick called Defying the Bullets, where someone, an intruder, had switched real bullets for blanks in her gun, and she shot and killed her beloved husband on stage. So that's the very dramatic first chapter. It deals with that incident.
And as I was reading that, I was thinking, well, this could just go the way of a whodunit. How did this happen? Was magic always going to be a part of it, the mystical, the magical? Was that always going to be part of it for you?
I think so, because I generally write about that stuff. I love New England Gothic. I love the creepy New England writers, and I emulate them. And so I think I was always going to write about that thread of magic and the supernatural. It creeps up in all of my books. I had no idea that Rev was going to be a magician. Initially, she kind of told me, and then I got to do all this really cool research about magic and the history of magic and go to Las Vegas, where I'd never been. And I thought I was going to hate it, and I really loved it. It was so cool. But yeah, Rev is interesting because she is a wife and mother, and yet she's a performer. So there are those two aspects to her. Mm-hmm. And bringing both of those together and mixing in the supernatural and the kind of thrillery elements, and then added to that a kind of even bigger question of government conspiracy that's in there too. It was kind of a challenge, but I knew all of those pieces needed to be there for this book and for the series. This is the first book in a series. So I wanted there to be a lot of stuff to work with. So I just kind of opened myself to, okay, what can these possibilities be? A wife and mother, yet a magician, a performer, yet someone who is descended from a magical family. Who can be my heroine, and you know, have to kind of step up to the plate and discover her magical abilities, which she hadn't really known that much about.
And there is so much about discovering her past, finding out what secrets there are in her past, which ultimately brings her to Holly and figuring out what's going on.
Yeah. And I think her journey mirrors mine a little bit when I moved to the Western Mass hill towns. It's a very different world, and it's very rural. There are a lot of artists and writers, but there are also a lot of farmers. There are just the most interesting characters you could ever imagine. And so I kind of had to learn it. I had to learn how to be a hill towner. And that was a really interesting process. And I think I accomplished it pretty well. And I had friends kind of across all spectrums. And that was just so great. And it was such a rich atmosphere to be writing in. And also, I was lucky enough when I first moved to the hill towns to live in a house that was on this, what I call Writer's Ridge. It was a house that was part of the Cummington Center for the Arts when that was going. So a lot of writers, some very famous writers, cycled through. But also on the ridge, there are the houses of three national poet laureates over the last 100 years, William Cullen Bryant, William J. Smith, and Richard Wilbur. And I thought, oh my God, if ever I'm going to tap into some writing energy, it's going to be now. And I just, by chance, had a writer for a housemate, Frederick Ryken, who wrote a few great novels, three great novels, The Odd Sea, Lost Legends of New Jersey, and the brilliant Day for Night. And just seeing him go through this process, talking with his agent, his editor, I realized that, you know, writing is not that inaccessible. People, you know, people from my background, people who cook a lot of lentil soup and hate vacuuming, they can be writers too. So I thought, hey, I can try it.
I'm curious as to that osmosis feel. Do you feel an energy? I mean, when you're around it and there are people around you who are writing, there is a history of writing within the place where you are. Obviously, that's not a deterrent, but certainly, I assume from your answer just a moment ago that it's something that fuels you as well.
Oh, I think it absolutely does. And I just enjoyed it so much, just being around writers, being around people who cared about writing and books. I've always been a bookaholic. Ever since I was a little kid, you know, my parents would take me to the drugstore and did I want candy? No. Did I want dolls? No. I wanted those little golden books. I'd sit in front of that spinner, you know, and send it whirling around and just pick out maybe 5 or 10 of them. Yeah. My parents had to kind of corral me. But yeah, I've always been a huge book lover. Had I realized that, quote unquote, real people could be writers, and they weren't all sort of up in the stratosphere, I might have tried to do it more seriously earlier in my life.
The fact that Rev is coming to this Massachusetts hill town ultimately for safety, ultimately to get away and to keep her children safe. And as she gets mired more into the story and realizes that the evils come with her, that's fascinating to read as this woman is battling what she doesn't know and trying to keep that family safe.
Yeah, I think that her primary motivation after her husband's death is to keep her family, what remains of her family, intact. And she will do whatever she needs to do to make that happen, including moving to this crazy little town in the middle of a forest from, you know, the big city lights of Las Vegas, giving up all thoughts of performing again. She gives up so much in order to keep her family intact. But to her, that's the most important thing. That's really what drives her and is going to drive her throughout the rest of the series, wherever it takes her, into whatever kind of strange and horrible situations. But there's a lot that really supports her, too. She has her family that had stayed in Western Mass. She left Western Mass. She grew up there, and she left Western Mass when she was in her 20s. But she has family. She has her parents, her grandmother, who are characters in and of themselves. And all of the women in her family have special powers. So she's got those things to help her out. But she does have a lot of danger coming at her now and in the future in the next books.
Did you know that you always wanted horses to be a part of this? Rev's daughters are very devoted to their horses and to that life.
Yeah, I've always had horses. That's another little shard that intersects with my own life. Ever since I was a kid, I loved two things, horses and books. And I was very lucky. My parents gave me riding lessons after being harangued by me for quite a few years. And I learned how to negotiate that world and how to keep horses sort of on the cheap in your backyard. I was a 4-H'er. I've always been a trail rider. I showed a little when I was a kid, but not that much. And it was the magic of horses that I really wanted to convey and to stay in touch with. And the very beginning image, the image that I had of Rev was of her riding. So I think horses were always going to be a part of that for me.
There's a mystery and a magical element to that animal, isn't there?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Especially for women, I think, you know, not there aren't great men, male riders, but yeah, it's this bond that is kind of mystical that a lot of young girls have with horses, and some of us never lose that. I still have a horse. I've had a horse for most of my life. I have struggled to keep a horse. I've eaten a lot of lentils in order to be able to keep my horse. I've been given horses. I have, you know, I've hardly ever paid for a horse, and if I have, it hasn't been all that much money. There are great horses out there for not much money at all. But then it's the keeping them that's
right. They're looking for a home.
And yeah.
When you put all of these ingredients together and there is Rev's discovery of the Holy Book of the Dead and this ancient weather-bound book and trying to figure that out and those mysteries within that book. And I love that throughout the novel you refer to it as the book. I mean, it's the book. And does it become something else to you as you're writing it, that it's almost a master in some ways because you have to be true to the book?
Absolutely. The book within the book, I think, was always going to be a part of it, you know, given the title, The Holy Book of the Dead. That's been with me from day one, too. The learning of the magic, you know, it's really the hero's journey. You don't know your powers. You have no clue. You have no idea. And then somewhere along the way, you get this guide, whether it's, you know, some old wizard or whether it's a book that will take you through, lead you through to discover what your true power is. And for Rev, it is the Holy Book of the Dead, which has been in her family for many, 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 many generations. But the key to it has been lost because of the deaths of her grandparents. And no one now knows how to use the book, so she has to figure it out. She's got to discover it. It's going to take her a lot of places. It's going to take her back to Las Vegas. It's going to take her actually to Ireland, because her family is a member of a kind of, again, mystical race called the Tuatha De Danann. And I hope I'm saying that right for all you Irish folks out there, but I did listen to a lot of pronunciations online. And they were considered this sort of magical race of people until the 1700s. I believe they were it was considered to be a real race of people. And Rev does have a magical power, as you had alluded to in the past, but she doesn't know the extent of it. And the book, hopefully, she's going to get the book to help her figure that out.
When it comes to the series element of this? It'll be a quartet of novels?
That's what I was originally thinking, but now I'm not 100% sure. So now I'm calling it the Revelation Chronicles.
Okay.
So I'm at a point now where I can still do that.
At what point was it that you realized it wasn't just going to be a book, a novel?
Gosh, it was way into the writing process, maybe 3 years into it, that I realized I couldn't contain the story in one book.
And was it already sold at that point, or did you sell it as a series?
No, I sold this. I just sold the one book. I had heard too many cautionary tales to do otherwise. But yeah. So we'll see. We'll see where this journey takes me as well as Rev. But, you know, it's the kind of thing. I'm just going to write these things because I have to. You know, I have two drawer novels. You know, I can work on getting them out into the world if the series doesn't take off. But, you know, I have to write them.
You are a bookseller, as I mentioned, and you do that while you write. And of course, a part of being an independent bookseller is hand selling. Has it been awkward to recommend your own novel yet?
It's getting better. And, you know, my friends at the Odyssey are kind of pushing me along. You know, if it was up to me, I think I would just say, oh, yeah, you know, this is an okay book. You could try it. Maybe you'll like it. But come to the launch party because there'll be cake. You know, that's the kind of thing I would be saying to people.
Yes.
But, you know, Joan is amazing. She's the owner of the Odyssey Bookshop.
Right?
Joan Granier. And she has been pushing me from day one, and it's been great to have her on my side.
So, you know, you're talking about you'll keep writing these things, but you get a major publisher, you're getting wonderful reviews. Obviously, sales are what counts, but it is, as far as the first part of this process, everything seems to be going quite nicely.
Thank you very much. I think we're doing okay, yeah.
Yeah. What is that process like when you write it, you put it out there, and the reviews start coming in, and they're real. I mean, they're not just good. They're starred. They're say, hey, this is terrific. And it's rather universal.
Well, it's, you know, it's a very humbling experience to have that happen. And I'm so grateful to everybody that's not only the print and online reviewers and, you know, Publishers Weekly and Booklist, but to all of the Amazon Vine and Goodreads folks who are reading it and reviewing it. It's just amazing to me that this is happening. And it's really cool. and really fun.
And it also taps into a market, right? I mean, this is a market that is popular with, this is a genre that is gaining popularity.
Yes, and by sheer chance, I kind of tapped into that.
Right.
Yeah, and I, you know, I have this theory about that whole thing, about how magic is really creeping into literature, and people like serious writers like Justin Cronin is writing, you know, the Passage and that series. Lev Grossman's Magicians series, Deb Harkness. Alice Hoffman's been doing it all along and doing it splendidly. But yeah, and my theory is this. It's that in the last maybe 5 or 10 years, certainly the last 5 years, we've been dealing with all of this kind of magical technology, all this stuff we have no idea how it works, the internet and everything that comes along with it, and GPS, and everybody knowing where we are all the time. It's kind of spooky. And, you know, my theory is that we have this fascination with it, and yet we're afraid of it. So for what it's worth, that's what I think is kind of going on in the psyche of the world, really, and the reason that literature that deals with magic and deals with those things, you know, the hero being fascinated and yet kind of horrified by their magical powers.
And removed.
Yes, and removed.
And, you know, as a radio guy, I talk into a microphone, my voice ends up in somebody's car. I have no idea how that happens.
Really?
But it doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. And yet we have to deal with these, you know, these huge shifts, really, in the way that we deal with the world. And I think reverting to reading magical literature is one of the ways we deal with it.
Absolutely. Well, it's a tremendous new novel. It's entitled The Holly Book of the Dead. It is published by Ballantine Books. Chrysler Zarlin is the author. You can find out more by going to chryslerzarlin.com. Chrysler, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's an honor.
Thank you so much. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.